Good morning. It is 9:07, and we're here today for the meeting of May 6, 2016. Based on the number of bright eyes out there, not too many celebrated on Cinco de Mayo, so that should allow for clear discussions. I have a little bit of housekeeping as usual, so I'm going to read from my script, and that is that members of the public who wish to address the Housing Commission must complete a speaker request form. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes each, and collective testimony by those who support or oppose an item shall be limited to no more than 15 minutes total per side. Non-agenda public items are heard at the beginning of each meeting. Those who wish to address the board about a topic that is not on the agenda must fill out a white speaker request form and rush down and give it to Angie over here as quickly as possible. Members of the public may also request to have an item pulled from the consent agenda by submitting a speaker request form prior to the start of the meeting. But of course, since we haven't announced what our proposed consent agenda is, you don't know yet if you want to have it pulled. To speak on a matter on the agenda, members of the public must complete a speaker request form and submit it to the recording secretary before the item is called. Those who wish to speak in opposition to the item must complete the pink colored form, like these, and those who wish to speak in favor of an item must complete a gold colored form, like this. Okay. Either way, you got to get it and get it over to Angie as quickly as possible so that she can then unobtrusively get it over to me and then I'll figure out what to do with it. Okay. On that note, we've completed the housekeeping. Next, I'll look to the members of the commission and say, do any of you have any comments or questions that you wish to make this morning? Okay. Seeing no indication of such, then we'll go to the comments by the president and CEO, Mr. Gentry. Do you have anything?
As always, I do, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I want to comment on some items that have occurred since the last board meeting and one that's getting ready to occur next week. I want to compliment staff here, in particular, Suket Dayal. Suket, stand up a minute, please. The annual Moving to Work conference was held in Washington, D.C. on April 21st to the 22nd. And this conference was put together by this agency, which means Suket primarily. And this was, we had about 200 people or so there. This was the 39 agencies who are the current Moving to Work agencies across the country. It was a great success, and we got a lot of attention on Capitol Hill. I want to thank Suket publicly for that. Thank you, sir. We also were featured in a couple of panels at that conference talking about addressing homelessness. And also we participated in thanking our congressional reps, particularly the senators, who helped us get Moving to Work extended in December of last year. Also that same week, on April the 20th, we had a visit, interestingly, from one of my old home cities. The Richmond, Virginia City Council brought about 150 Richmonders here to learn from San Diego. And the current CEO of my old agency was here along with a number of other city leaders. They came over and spent a day with this housing agency. I know that Debbie Ruane and Maria Velasquez participated in leading our presentation to them. And we looked very good to them. And Debbie, Maria, thank you very much for that. Appreciate it. I will point out that on a third issue here, the proposed ballot measure for Article 34 that we talked about at the last board meeting, we've introduced to the City Council, and the City Council has taken a step forward to put the ballot measure to increase our authority on the November ballot. It would increase our capacity to construct housing, affordable housing, to the 38,000 number that has been shown in a recent SANDAG report to be what the shortage is projected for the area in coming years. The council has unanimously voted to direct the city attorney to draft the proposed ballot language for the measure. So that is in process. And we have been advised that the official action to designate the ballots on the November, for the November election, that action will be taken by the city council in the first week of August. So it's not a done deal yet, but it is on its way, and I wanted to make sure that you all knew about that. One final note for you all is I have been asked to go back to Washington, D.C. next week to give some testimony before a congressional subcommittee on housing. And interestingly, it has to do with the comparability between American housing, affordable housing programs and those in the U.K. Some of you may or may not know, I've done considerable work in England and Scotland in the past, from 1994 to my last visit there in 2012. And so the House Housing Subcommittee has got a couple of papers being presented on how we can learn from the Brits and managing our programs and what we can do, much like they've done over there since Thatcher and privatizing and deregulating their local programs. And my own opinion is that we're way ahead of them. And so this will be a good time to put San Diego in the national spotlight, and I'm very pleased with that. And thank you. And, Mr. Chairman, and there's some photos in front of you that note some of the things that have occurred in the last since the last board meeting. And with that, Mr. Chairman, my report is concluded. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I'm going to propose to the board a consent agenda, but I'm going to do it just a little bit differently this month. I'm going to actually propose it twice because we do have a speaker request form in favor of an item on the agenda, and I'm going to be proposing that as a consent item, but I'm perfectly willing to allow them to speak on it. So initially, I'm going to propose as a consent agenda items 100, 103, 105, and 106. Is there a motion regarding that consent agenda? Commissioner Hubbard has moved approval of the consent agenda. Is there a second? And Commissioner Surdy has seconded that motion. Any discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor of consent agenda number one, please indicate by saying aye. That part of the consent agenda is approved. As a second item, I'm also going to propose that item 107 be approved on consent, but we do have a request from Gloria Brown to speak on behalf of that motion, so I'm going to give Gloria an opportunity. Are you here? Ms. Brown, if you'll push the button to turn the little red light on and then identify yourself, and then go ahead and speak.
Good morning to the members and Mr. Gentry. My name is Gloria Brown, and this is Michelle Hawkinson. I am the with SEIU, San Diego Housing Commission Chapter President and Vice President. We are here today. I work as a Housing Commission in the Rental Assistance Department and have been there for 10-plus years. I'm proud to work with my co-workers, which are here with us today. We help keep families with the agency off the street and self-sufficiency and independence. I'm here today to urge you to approve the San Diego Housing Commission contract with SEIU. Our members have worked very hard to help make this agency an employer of choice. And we believe that with the 3-year contract, we would help expand on this principle for fair compensation for the important work that we do. We appreciate the management team that was willing to bargain with us in good faith and allow us to agree to a contract that the employees and management can equally feel good about. I stand here today on behalf of our membership to thank you for recognizing the work that we do. As you know, this agreement includes increased health care benefits, which will keep employees and their families healthy and safe and ready to work, and the 3% wage increase, which will continue to strengthen San Diego Housing Commission position as an employer of choice. We feel that this is a fair contract for our employees, whose work is valuable public service to our community. Thank you.
Thank you, and we appreciate the fact that there is, I think, a growing sense of teamwork between the agency and the union. We're family, and sometimes in the past that hasn't always felt that way, but I do believe that there's been a growing sense of family. So I want to thank you for your 10 years of working with us, and thank all of your members on our behalf for the good work that they do, and we look forward to it continuing.
Thank you very much.
On that note, I'm going to call the question of the consent for item 107. Commissioner Tassin has moved it. Commissioner Davis has seconded that motion. Any discussion? All in favor say aye. Item 107 is approved, and again, thank you. Our next item on the agenda is item 50, which is the approval of the minutes. We have the minutes for the regular meeting and the special meeting, both that occurred on April 8th of this year. You've had a chance to review those. Is there a motion first? Commissioner Surdy has moved approval of both sets of minutes. Is there a second? Commissioner Hubbard has seconded that motion. Now, is there any discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor of approving the minutes of April 8th, both regular and special, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
It's approved. Okay. At this moment, we're going to be a little bit of a burden to those of you who still have items that are not on the consent agenda, because I'm going to temporarily adjourn the public meeting of this session, and we're going to go into closed session for a while, and then we will re-adjourn at the end of the closed session. Okay, let the record reflect that we have reconvened in public session at 10:25 this morning, and report that we still have a quorum of the board present. There are five of us, Ben Moraga and Frank Rattasin. Ben wasn't here at the beginning, and Frank had to leave because of the time delays that we've had. But we still have a quorum. Counselor?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In accordance with the requirements of the California Brown Act, the Housing Commission met in closed session to discuss item Roman numeral 4A, specifically the Mountain View project. With respect to that matter, discussions were had, and the board voted by a vote of 5-0 with Commissioner Rattasin not present and not participating to authorize general counsel to take any and all actions necessary to protect the interests of the San Diego Housing Commission, including but not limited to the initiation of litigation. In addition, the board took the following action. The board gave authority to general counsel with the approval of the chief president and chief executive officer of the San Diego Housing Commission to enter into negotiations with the parties involved with the Mountain View project to come to a potential resolution of the matter, provided it's done expeditiously. That concludes the matters that were discussed in closed session. And for the record, we will not convene in closed session again to discuss any of the other matters.
Thank you. And now I'm going to change the order of the agenda for just a second and call item 109. Commissioner Spoon?
Chairman, I would like to make a motion to postpone item 109 until the next board meeting to give the opportunity to the parties to resolve this matter.
Is there a second to that motion? I'm sorry, but Commissioner Davis beat you. She's quick. Okay. All right. Is there any discussion of the motion and second? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor of the motion, which is to remove item 109 from today's agenda and move it to the next board meeting, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? The motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Okay. So now we'll go to item 102. Pardon me, did I call? We've had enough movement here. I'm sorry, item 101.
Good morning. I'm Chair Gramley and Commissioners, President and CEO Mr. Gentry. I'm Ann Kern, Vice President of Housing Finance and Program Development. And with me is Joe Correa, Real Estate Project Manager. Before Joe gives you his presentation on the Bella Vista Apartments, I did just want to give you an update. We will be scheduling a real estate committee this month to discuss the parameters for revisions to our bond policy to address the state changes, including their changes regarding the increased developer fees. We will be inviting one of our bond counsels, Justin Cooper of Orrick, Harrington and Sutcliffe, to assist us with this effort, and just wanted to let you know that we will be moving forward with that in the next couple of weeks. So with that, we'll just turn it over to Joe to give you an overview of the Bella Vista Apartments.
Yes, good morning, Commissioners. The item before you today is Bella Vista preliminary bond items. Two recommendations. The first is recommending that the Housing Authority approve initial steps to issue up to $23,300,000 in tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds, including an inducement resolution, a bond allocation application to the California Debt Limit Allocation Committee, approving bond counsel, straddling Ilka Carlson Routh, and a financial advisor, CSG Advisors. We'd also be requesting a City Council TEFRA hearing, Tax Equity and Fiscal Responsibility Act, as required by the Internal Revenue Service regulations. This is the initial step for bond issuance. We will return to you at a later date for possible final approval. The second recommendation would be to authorize the President and Chief Executive Officer to execute the various associated documents, perform acts necessary, convenient, or appropriate with the General Counsel's advice. Just brief background, Bella Vista is a proposed acquisition with rehabilitation and preservation of 170 existing apartment units for families. It's located at 4742 Solala Avenue in Encanto. This was previously called the Logan Square Apartments, and in 2001, the Housing Commission made a $1 million residual receipts loan to the then-developer Logan Square Housing Partners, LP. Also at that time, in 2001, there was an issuance of $10.5 million of tax-exempt multifamily housing mortgage revenue bonds. And Logan Square Housing Partners, LP, previously obtained 144 Section 8 project-based assistance, and that's administered by HUD, not by the Housing Commission. And that HUD Section 8 HAP contract is currently in place until 2027. The current proposal before you includes a proposed payoff of the Housing Commission's existing $968,000 loan. Proposal also requests new issuance of up to $23,300,000 of tax-exempt multifamily housing mortgage revenue bonds. There is no Housing Commission new cash loan funds proposed with this proposal. It's entirely funded by tax-exempt bonds, tax credits, the seller carryback loan, and deferred developer fee. That deferred developer fee amount is based on Tax Credit Allocation Committee new rules for calculating the TCAC allowed developer fee. They are proposing the maximum the TCAC allows, $5,632,217. However, all of that developer fee is to be deferred, paid out of cash flow. If you turn to your report at page 2, we have a table that lists various development details. Also in your report at page 4, we have a table that lists a summary of the development team. The developer is Islas Development. They're an experienced for-profit developer. They've developed over 3,400 affordable multifamily housing units. The property is currently owned by Logan Square Housing Partners, LP. They would be the seller, and a different entity, Bella Vista Affordable Communities, would be the buyer. Some of the participants in these buyer and seller entities are common. The contractor would be Phase 3 Construction, an affiliated entity, and it would be managed by Logan Property Management, also affiliated entity, and the current property manager. I've included in the report a chart at attachment 4 that gives you the various entities and how they're linked together. This shows you the location map. It's located very close to I-5 south of Logan Avenue. And there you can see the site itself. Here are some site photos. That's a overall site photo. Another location shot. Another site photo. And this is a typical unit in the kitchen area. We've included tables 3A and 3B at page 6 of the report, estimated sources and uses of financing. The total development cost is estimated at $46,003,150, and that calculates out to $270,607 per unit total development cost. We've also included in the report at table 4, page 6, key performance indicators, and at table 5 with a comparable development projects. And as you can see from table 4, basically the gross building square foot hard cost is around $64 a foot. And table 5 shows you a comparison with other similar projects. And what it shows is that you can see the cost per unit is not the highest and not the lowest among the group that we've done comparably. There's no Housing Commission subsidy, cash subsidy per unit. And the rehab cost per unit is slightly higher than the other projects that we have shown here in this chart. Affordability is summarized at page 8, table 6 of the report. This will preserve 169 affordable housing units with rents in a 50 to 60% AMI range, plus one unrestricted manager's unit. Of the 170 units, 52 are one bedrooms, 94 are twos, and 24 are three bedrooms. And I think I previously mentioned that there is Section 8 project-based assistance on 144 of the 170 units. Now, there is a change to your report on the schedule. If approved by the Housing Commission today, then we would go on to the Housing Authority on May 24. And there's a report revision on the timing. Instead of going to the Tax Credit Allocation Committee and California Debt Limit Allocation Committee on May 20th, we would be going on prior to June 14. And instead of having the Tax Credit Allocation Committee and Debt Limit Allocation Committee on July 20th, we'd be going September 21st. That does not change the timing thereafter of the project. We still would hold to the estimated financing closing in late 2006 and the start in 2016. We'd be returning to the Housing Commission on September 9 for a final review and the Housing Authority on the 27th. Just to summarize the bond issuance, the proposed Housing Authority issuance of up to $23,300,000 is in tax-exempt bonds. The developer is responsible for payment of all costs under the bond financing. The bonds will not financially obligate the city, the Housing Authority, or the Housing Commission. Neither the full faith and credit nor the taxing power of the city nor the full faith and credit of the Housing Authority are pledged for repayment of the bonds. And just to summarize, there are project benefits here. We'd be preserving affordable housing units for additional years. We'd be receiving a cash payoff of approximately $968,000 from our existing loan. There's no Housing Commission new direct cash loan money being requested. The bond issuance approval is going to leverage $17.4 million of tax credits. We'd be creating jobs for construction workers and material suppliers. And finally, the real winners are the tenants themselves, who will be receiving improved units and thus a better quality of life. I have before us today the developer, Jules Arthur, and I think Ruben Islas is also here, and they are available to answer questions. Let me turn it over to you and ask what questions you may have.
Commissioners, any questions? Commissioner Spoon?
Joe, can you give us some background on the 19.7% developer fee?
Let me have Jules Arthur, perhaps he can give you a more complete answer. The developer fee is based on a calculation of a new rule, and I think I've, on page 7, I've laid out the calculation parameters. It's based on a percentage of eligible construction-related basis, a percentage of unadjusted eligible acquisition basis, and a rule for a certain amount of cash for every tax credit unit over 100. But I think your question goes to how did they determine how much their developer fee they were going to have. Am I correct?
Well, I think it's based upon the new formula, which is why it's significantly higher than what we've seen other than in the last board meeting when we also saw this. And in the last board meeting, we had discussions with the developer about that developer fee.
If I may address that, good morning. Debbie Ruane, Senior Vice President, Real Estate Committee. Yeah, the new development fee, developer fee calculation is impacting all of the deals that will be brought before you. What we are doing is working with council on a guideline, parameters under which the Housing Commission can impose its needs in the deals. So we are going to be requesting a real estate committee meeting. We're having discussions with the developers right now. The challenge is we can't really create a one-size-fits-all fix for all of these deals. Some are large, some are small, some are nonprofit, some are for-profit. So we are on the preliminary bringing these to you for approval now with the condition that staff will be working with the developers to ensure that these are right-sized.
But I don't think my memory is fading so rapidly as to I remember last month that you informed us on a similar discussion that the new developer fee allowed by TCAC was 15%. And Commissioner Spoon has just calculated it at 19.7 in this proposal. So what's amiss?
No, it is listed on page 7. It's 15% of the unadjusted eligible construction-related basis and 5% of the unadjusted eligible acquisition basis. So it's not a straight calculation, but I am going to ask the developer to discuss this more fully.
Ruben Islas, Islas Development, Logan Capital Advisors. Like we've been talking about, it's a calculation. I can't do the math in my head, but I would assume that Novogradic and Company, who we use to be the consultants on it, are probably correct. As you are aware, I'm sure, is that it allows for more basis, so we're more competitive in the market. But yeah, it's just the new rules, the new calculation, and That's I think, the best answer and only one I have.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. It's a new formula, right or wrong. I mean, it's a new formula. It certainly doesn't, from a policy standpoint, it doesn't promote, you know, the building of additional units with the extra money going to developers' fees. But putting all of that aside, in our discussions last month, we talked with the developers about the reinvestment in the community because of the size of the developer fees, and we got some representation from them that they would use their best efforts to reinvest in the community. So I think that's what I'm looking for from you.
I'm happy to make that commitment. I was born and raised in San Diego, grew up in Barrio Logan. I actually grew up very close to this property. So our company is San Diego-based. This money will stay in San Diego. Absolutely, no question. I'll put that in writing.
Mr. Gentry?
Just in further clarification, a follow-up from the board meeting last month. Following board instruction, we had conversation with the head of TCAC in Sacramento about what we see as an egregiously high setting of the developer's fee of 15% of whatever it is, which is hugely more than this agency had employed in the past. The response from Sacramento is basically, solve your own problem. And so that's what we're going to be proposing to you all at a real estate committee meeting, probably either very late this month or early next. We'd like to get it done sooner rather than later. And as Mr. Wayne indicated, we want to make sure that developers' fees are sufficient to cover cost and risk, but not egregiously high. And where there is, for reasons of basis or otherwise technical to the program, to put in a higher than reasonable amount, that there be a commitment from the developer to reinvest that money back in properties here in San Diego. And so what I heard was a commitment here from a reputable developer to do so, and I'll take that at his word. And I'll also point out to the board, we will have something to you about before the next board meeting, giving you a recommendation, seeking your advice on what our parameters should be, which we can then publish, which can give the developer some prior guidance themselves.
Commissioner Sardi?
Yes. What's
the program? You want to turn on your microphone?
Excuse me. I'm interested in knowing what the program is going to be to accommodate the residents while their individual units are being upgraded. How will their housing function during that period? And what's the length of time that you estimate that they would be, removed from their existing homes?
I'll have Jeremy Turner, who's the construction manager, speak to that question, if that's okay.
Thanks for your time. Jeremy Turner, Phase 3 Construction. So with this project, as with others we've done in the past similar to it, we will be temporarily relocating residents while their apartments are being renovated. So depending on how the schedule ultimately lays out, we'll do this somewhere between 6 and 10 units a week will be renovated. And during that time, let's say it's 6 units, 3 of those units will be, the residents will be relocated on a Monday morning, and they'll come home on a Thursday afternoon. And we'll handle all their contents, all the belongings in the unit will be professionally packed and stored and moved as necessary to complete the renovations. And the tenants will be either, based on, their personal preference, they'll either be compensated with dollars based on a formula, number of nights out, number of residents in the unit, and allowances for transportation and per diem for meals, or they will be accommodated in a close-by hotel at no cost to them. And so we'll take care of getting them to and fro as well. And then so they come home on Thursday afternoon, brand new apartment. And then the second group of residents that week will move out Tuesday morning, come back Friday afternoon.
Thank you. So you've calculated how much that would cost per unit?
Yeah, so we have an estimate, I think, in our pro forma right now of $200,000 for the total relocation cost, and that's based on, an understanding of the current resident population as it sits now. Now, this project won't actually start until the end of this year, beginning of next, and so resident, the actual population may shift, more people in an apartment, different. And so the precise relocation plan that we will provide once that once the project is nearer to commencement, we'll actually list the names of the residents, the number of residents in the unit, and the amount of dollars for the, you know, the relocation cost of that particular unit in a spreadsheet that it will be attached to. Some other forms that are required, you know, notices of non-displacement and 30-day notices, you know, all of, you know, we've done this a bunch of times, and there's a whole packet that gets kind of put together, a relocation plan, as we get closer.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I'm still new at this, but I don't recall seeing what the financial number would be per unit.
Yeah, it's not. I don't remember what it is per unit either. It's the total budget right now is $200,000 for the 170 units, and so it accounts for either the hotel accommodation or the kind of cash in hand option. If folks want to go and stay with family members or neighbors, most of the time folks go and stay nearby on their own. But the hotel's always available as well.
I'm sorry, I missed that number in our handout.
Oh, in your handout.
Yeah. I didn't see that as part of the financials of this project.
It's in the construction section of the costs in the sources and uses.
On attachment 6, it's on page 611. It shows the construction relocation cost of $200,000.
And we're doing this, by the way, right now. We just completed doing this at another project here in San Diego, Olivewood Gardens. On 55th Street, we just renovated a much smaller project, but we renovated 25 out of the 60 units at that property over the course of 4 weeks, and we did it just this way, where we moved three apartments out on a Monday and back on a Thursday. And that property is on a city ground lease, and so the Housing Commission, I think, has some awareness of it.
So that $200,000 is in addition to the $8,770,000 for the rehabilitation, or is that included in it?
It's in addition, yeah.
It's in addition.
It's in soft costs.
Okay.
And the per unit, to answer your question, would be $200,000 divided by 169 affordable units. So it would be a little over $1,000 a unit.
Okay. I've tried to find, and I'm probably just blind, but I've tried to find some listing or some schedule as to what is going to be included in that almost $52,000 per unit in rehabilitation. I don't see it, so maybe you can advise me.
Yeah, I'm happy to. I think it is part of the packet. I did see it's an attachment.
Attachment 7, there's a listing of the proposed rehabilitation work. But Mr. Turner can brief you on any specific line items you're looking for.
I'm looking at an acquisition cost of $168,000 per unit, and I'm looking at a rehabilitation cost of $52,000 per unit, and I'm going, wow, this has got to be Cadillac. So what is it you intend to put in there? Because I haven't – okay.
Do you want these?
No, I can read them. I'm still the only one at the desk, I think, that has 20/20 vision. There's two of us. So we're taking out all the old metal framed windows and putting in dual pane windows?
Yes, sir.
And are those going to be Milgard windows or somewhat some lesser brand? I'm just being pushy now.
Okay. I think the currently spec'd windows are AMSCO is the brand.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask, Milgard's got a great guarantee.
They do, but we've been working with a window installer for the last 12 years, and hasn't done us wrong yet. And we're happy with this product.
And the medicine cabinet at $95 each, that's acquisition? Or does that include labor?
That includes everything. That's okay. Taking out the old one, putting in the new one, making sure the face in the mirror looks good.
That'd take more than that if I were the one looking at the chair, so. Okay. I would say it's just interesting that almost 33% of the original acquisition cost is going to be added to it. As rehabilitation.
This is a big rehab. Yeah, I mean, it's undoubtedly a big rehab. This is, we're in addition to what you may have just, I know you haven't had a chance to really peruse it, but you'll see that in addition to fixtures and finishes and that type of stuff that goes into normal rehabs, we're actually replacing all of the ground floor plumbing. The units have There's copper plumbing in the slab and underground that is significantly deteriorated. We've had a lot of slab leaks over there. And so we're actually replacing all of the ground floor distribution piping. This is a slightly deeper dug project than a lot of rehabs we've been through over the last decade.
So you're taking the plumbing, the active plumbing out of the slab and putting it in the floor joists above and...
Yeah, we're going back with PEX. It's a plastic.
I was going to ask, are you then going with PEX?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. And furnaces, what have we got there? Wall heaters?
No, there's forced air furnaces and ducting and distribution to vented units.
Okay, so that means then that you were required to satisfy Title 24 on your rehab.
Yeah, right now we're conducting an energy audit as part of our TCAC application is required, and based on that energy audit, we're going to spec the actual equipment. But it will everything that gets replaced has to get replaced, obviously with Title 24 compliance. But we're going to be aiming to exceed that in order to achieve significant reductions in energy consumption on all fronts.
Okay, I've been hogging the microphone. Anyone want to step in? If not, then I'm going to ask you a couple more. Is there a community room?
There is.
Okay. Lately, what we've been insisting upon when we're doing any kind of effort like this is that the developer, property manager, someone be responsible for setting up an educational program inside the community, specifically geared toward one of the items being specifically geared toward improving reading comprehension for the children. Is there going to be any thought, or has there been thought given to anything of that nature?
I'll let Jules Arthur speak to that.
Okay, Jules.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
This has been a tax credit project for 15 years, and part of the mandate is that we provide educational programs, and we take great pride on our programs we provide. We work with our nonprofit partner to make sure we provide the types of programs you suggested. If there's something specific you'd like to see, we'll definitely entertain it. But this is a community that's really in need of help. So we try and do as much as we can to make sure that we're improving their quality of life.
Okay, because very much concerned about the lady who's sitting right behind you can attest that I'm very much concerned about reading comprehension programs for the youth. And what type of internet capabilities are going to be available to the tenants?
We actually, it's a functioning community room right now, so we have internet in there for the tenants to use, and we do after-school programs as well in there. So there is plans to basically, right now the site doesn't have a very good playground area, so we're putting a new playground in, and we're creating kind of a community space that opens out to the playground, so we have kind of a indoor-outdoor facility there. So we are definitely high on our radar for things we need to do to improve the community there.
Commissioners, any other questions?
I move to approve.
Commissioner Spoon has moved approval of the project as proposed. Is there a second? Commissioner Cerdy beat Commissioner Davis and was able to get the second in. Any additional discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor of the proposal, indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's approved unanimously. Thank now we're going to hold you to it.
Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Okay, now can I call 102? Okay. Item 102.
Good morning, Chairman Gramlin, Commissioners, Ann Kern again. Happy to bring another bond development before you this morning. Item 102 is the Reverend Glenn Allison Apartments. We provided a handout to you for this item to provide some additional information regarding the development costs and the comparable properties that have been developed. Not a big list. This is a smaller acquisition rehabilitation development with permanent supportive housing, and we don't see a lot of those, but we've provided you what information we could pull together, and do apologize that this information was not included in the staff report, and commit that all future bond reports will have this information going forward. With that, Cameron Chariardi will give you the overview of the proposed transaction.
Good morning, Commissioners. Chair Gramling. This item is a request for recommendation to the Housing Authority issue a bond inducement resolution for up to $9 million in multifamily housing revenue bonds for the development of Reverend Glenn Allison Apartments, authorize application submittals to the California Debt Limit Allocation Committee for a bond allocation, approve the selected financing team, and the Housing Authority authorize the President and CEO of the Housing Commission to execute and perform acts as appropriate to implement upon advice of General Counsel and or Bond Counsel. In addition, staff requests that the City Council hold a Tax Equity and Fiscal Responsibility Act public hearing and adopt a resolution approving the issuance of multifamily housing revenue bonds. The proposed project is an existing 58-unit supportive housing development located at 5020 Federal Boulevard in the Webster neighborhood of the Mid-City Communities Planning Area. Glen Allison is a two-story apartment complex comprised of 12 studio units, 32 one-bedroom units, and 14 two-bedroom units. The development was originally constructed in 1976 and was acquired by the Association for Community Housing Solutions in 2006. It underwent a minor rehabilitation in 2007 after being acquired by TAX. Current amenities include laundry facilities, surface parking, and one converted unit used to provide office and tenant service areas. Wakeland and TAX will complete a substantial rehabilitation of the property with approximately $40,000 per unit in rehabilitation hard costs currently budgeted. The scope of work will incorporate a number of energy efficiency and other green measures. In addition, Wakeland and TAX also plan to construct a new freestanding office and community room to provide more space for the delivery of tenant services, additional common area space, and office space for management. The developer of the project will be Wakeland Housing. During the 15-year tax credit compliance period, the project will be owned by a limited partnership comprised of Wakeland as the co-general partner and TAX as the managing general partner. TAX will continue to manage the property and provide services to the residents. The total development cost of the project will be approximately $16.5 million. Sources of funding include 4% tax credits, tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds, funds from the Federal Home Loan Bank's Affordable Housing Program, a seller carryback note, transfers from reserves, and an existing residual receipts loan from the California Department of Housing and Community Development. Wakeland is requesting the issuance of bonds in the amount of up to $9 million, and there are no Housing Commission funds being proposed for this project. The developer fee for this project is approximately $1.8 million and is capped by TCAC regulations. Glen Allison will be affordable for a 55-year term at varying affordability levels ranging from 25 to 60% of area median income as shown in Table 4 of the staff report for you. Approval of the bond inducement and TEFRA resolutions does not commit the Housing Authority to issue bonds. The bonds would not constitute a debt of the city. If bonds are ultimately issued for the project, the bonds will not financially obligate the city, the Housing Authority, or the Housing Commission, because security for the repayment of the bonds will be limited to specific private revenue sources of the project. The requested actions are preliminary steps to issue bonds, and the project will be brought forward for approval sometime next year. The developer expects to close financing and begin rehabilitation work shortly thereafter with an estimated completion date of February 2018. This concludes our presentation, and we also have Peter Armstrong on behalf of Wakeland Housing here to answer any questions. Thank you.
Commissioners, any questions at this point? I want to, if I'm reading this correctly, I want to commend the developers on the fact that they're looking at including units that are as low as 25% of median income. So that we're actually reaching down a little bit further and getting some lower income citizens housed. Did I read this correctly, Debbie? Okay. So very commendable, because too many times, such as in this last, the deal right that just preceded this, income limitations were at 50 and 60% of median income, which means that we missed a whole band of 25 and 30 and 35% median income. You know, the city of San Diego, it's not a secret to any of us in this room, is one of the highest rent areas in the entire country. And yet, median income for a family, I believe it was a family of four, is only in the 60,000s. So it makes it tough. Because if the median is 60,000s, it means there's a whole lot of people making less than that. So I don't have any additional questions at this time. Anyone else? In that case, is there a motion? Commissioner Spoon has moved approval. Is there a second? Was that you? Okay. Commissioner Davis has seconded, because this time I wasn't sure. Since there's been no discussion, I'll call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you. Item 104.
Good morning again, Chair Gramling, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, Mr. Christensen, Debbie Ruane, Real Estate Division. You're going to hear a presentation from staff who have been actively involved in addressing the physical needs of our real estate portfolio. After much work with our consultants, this agency has identified funds and funding sources to be used in a creative and productive manner to maintain our real estate assets. We're very pleased to be able to present this to you, and it's essentially a plan of attack on how we ensure our properties stay in excellent condition. With that, I'll turn it over to Emmanuel and Hanan.
Thank you, Debbie. Good morning, Chairman Gramling, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, Mr. Christensen. My name is Emmanuel Arellano, Director of Portfolio Management. And here with me is Hanan Bowman, Asset Strategy Manager with our group. Hanan recently joined our team about 5 months ago to help us create and implement a capital replacement plan for the real estate portfolio. Hanan has over 25 years of real estate development and operations experience working as the Deputy Executive Director of the Yolo County Housing Authority, Senior Asset Manager at Mercy Housing, and most recently as the Director of Real Estate at City Heights CDC. We are very lucky to have him as part of our team. The item in front of you is a proposed fiscal year 17 capital expenditures plan, where the commission will perform work at 87 different properties, including 39 single-family homes, for a total of 826 housing commission-owned affordable housing units. 87 properties approximately equates to 56% of the commission's real estate portfolio. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Hanan, who will provide you with additional details of our plan.
Good morning, Commissioners, Chairman Gramling. Per the staff report, the requested actions, President and Chief Executive Officer to award contracts concerning the completion of the capital needs as referenced in the attached report, proposed fiscal year 17 capital expenditures. Secondly, recommend the Housing Authority allow its approval of property portfolio management's capital expenditures annual budget to replace the need for individual housing commission and authority approvals for each project in the budget. And three, authorize the president and CEO to designate to substitute approved funding sources with other available funds. These actions will permit portfolio management to pursue fiscal year 17 capital improvements within the annual Housing Commission and Housing Authority approved budgets. The Portfolio Management Department's rehabilitation of the Commission's owned rental properties responds to the recommendations of the recent Green Physical Needs Assessment, originally procured in 2014 and completed in the summer of last year. By the end of fiscal year 2016, portfolio management will expend approximately $5 million in the furtherance of the recommendations of the GPNA to address roofs, water heaters, termite damage, plumbing, window replacements at 43 properties. The capital improvement plan for the Commission's properties following the recommendations of the GPNA is indeed a multi-year process. Fiscal year 17 portfolio management has selected 87 properties based on GPNA's indicated most pressing capital needs, informed also by property site inspections performed by portfolio management team and report and feedback from the property management site staff. The rehabilitation funds proposed for FY17 will allow portfolio management to conduct rehabilitation work on 826 apartments, representing about 56% of the Commission's own rental portfolio. Three sources are proposed for funding for the 17 capital improvements. One, moving to work. Two, the City of San Diego redevelopment bond funds. Three, local property funds and property reserves. Moving to work will fund the rehabilitation of properties included within the three FHA LLCs and the 84 affordable housing apartments at Villa Las Cumbres property. The City of San Diego will provide rehabilitation funds for three properties in North Bay and North Park. Local property funds will cover the rehabilitation work on the single-family homes, plus staffing costs and hard and soft cost contingencies. Portfolio Management Division's FY17 total proposed hard cost capital expenditure budget is $13.4 million. With the inclusion of staffing costs and contingency lines, the total proposed FY17 budget is $16.4 million, which has been included as a component of the Housing Commission's FY2017 agency budget. Within FHA North, $6,092 has been allocated for rehabilitation work of those 154 apartments. In FHA Central, $6,615 per apartment has been allocated for work on the 234 apartments of FHA Central. And then $14,212 has been allocated for work on the 301 apartments of FHA South, including the comprehensive rehabilitation of property at 121 Avril Road. $64,800 per apartment is allocated for the rehab work at the 84 affordable housing apartments at Villa Las Cumbres. And I'm saying affordable housing to differentiate it from as the non-public housing units at Villa Las Cumbres. And then $32,700 per apartment is allocated for work on the 10 apartments in North Bay and the 4 apartments in North Park. Work on the single-family homes will generally involve replacement of hot water tanks, electrical upgrades as needed, termite damage repair. For the FHA properties, the GPNA recommends interior and exterior work to improve the residents' living environment and quality of life. While these listed items will generally be addressed in 17, the preservation team's housing construction supervisors have also inspected the properties to determine the customized scopes of work particular to a given property and perhaps even particular to certain apartments within that property. the asset preservation unit within the portfolio management department will manage most of the work. Development services will oversee the comprehensive rehabilitation of Via Las Cumbres and 121 Avril Road. The use of the job order contracting method of procurement will be a key component for the successful completion of the proposed work in fiscal year 17. With JOC as an important procurement tool, we are confident that the experienced and skilled portfolio management team, working in tandem with the other commission departments, will ensure the timely and successful completion of the proposed FY17 capital work. The proposed capital expenditures plan is the result of the Housing Commission's thoughtful and strategic consideration of how best to address the capital needs of its real estate portfolio. We recognize the rehabilitation work will impact the daily lives and schedules of our residents. San Diego Housing Commission's construction supervisors will be responsible for ensuring contractors recognize the importance of treating our residents with respect. When brief temporary relocation is needed, portfolio management will work closely with property management to ensure residents are fully informed of the process and are impacted as little as possible. The scopes of work in 17 will likely require very minimal temporary relocation displacement, however. And through the procurement of the contracts for this work, staff will emphasize the Commission's focus on the use of construction firms with a San Diego presence that have a commitment to hiring local labor and a commitment to the spirit and intent of Section 3 of the Housing and Urban Development Act, 1968. We estimate that different phases of work will commence in the summer and fall of 16, with project completions expected by June of 17. This slide shows you the various allocations of projects by council districts. We note District 7 and 8, much larger than the other districts. District 7 is the work being done at Via Las Cumbres, likewise work on single-family homes, and the rehabilitation of the FHA South LLC comprised the proposed work in District 8. Portfolio management will work with council district staff to provide regular updates of the work in progress during the course of the fiscal year. Fiscal year 17 job sites will be spread throughout the city, from El Camino Real in the northern part of the city to the single-family homes near the international border. As a reminder, this will touch 87 different properties, or about 56% of the Housing Commission's real estate portfolio. The fiscal year 17 rehabilitation work addressing 56% of the Commission's rental portfolio is indeed a worthy start to meeting the recommendations of the GPNA, but we need to plan for work in coming years as well. In fiscal year 17, property reserve funds will be accrued to continue the rehabilitation work on other Commission-owned rental properties in fiscal year 18, as we explore additional funding mechanisms couched within strategic annual capital plans that respond to the Commission's diverse real estate portfolio. Although the preservation team and development services will provide project management services, the success of the fiscal year 17 capital plan requires the collaboration of multiple Housing Commission departments, so crucial to the timely and efficient implementation of the proposed scopes of work. We would like to take this opportunity to thank all the different departments involved: property management, development services, procurement, prevailing wage and Section 3 compliance, fiscal and legal, for their continued support and assistance. We also look forward to working with the communications department to to tell the story of the fiscal year 2017 capital improvements. We appreciate this opportunity to present the details of the Portfolio Management's fiscal year 17 capital plan. We're certainly happy to answer any questions you may have.
Commissioners, any questions at this point? Commissioner Spoon?
Just to confirm, the dollars are already in the current the budget that was approved earlier, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
I'm going to ask a question that I'm going to start by asking a question that really is not within your purview, but it is within the purview of others within the room. And that is that going back to my earliest days on this commission, which started in February of 2009, there has been a periodic question raised, or there's been a question raised periodically, as to why would we hold on to those 39 individual units, and why don't we instead put together a plan for the sale and distribution of those?
Good morning, Debbie Ruane. We are indeed working on a plan for the distribution and sale, or turning into a first-time home buyer program for our single-family assets.
Which will be a sale.
Which will be a sale.
Yeah. Okay, because, once again, property management for an organization of this size is most efficiently done if we're able to concentrate a lot of our efforts into a single site on that. So I'm glad to hear that. Next question, as you are looking at replacing water heaters, I'm specifically thinking of those 39 units, but I'll ask this question as it pertains to all of the properties. What type of water heaters, and I don't mean what brand, I mean what type of water heaters are you proposing to install in replacement of the existing ones?
They're typically gas water heaters, depending upon the property. It'll either be the 40-gallon per unit or the 100-gallon.
Okay, so we're looking at conventional water heaters.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Good, because I'm not impressed really with the efficiencies, cost efficiencies of tankless. That's why I'm asking the question. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. We considered the tankless but determined that it was not as efficient or cost effective.
We agree. Okay, next item. In your package that came to us, there was a photograph of a what appeared to be a bathroom based on the size and shape of the window that was there. And there was a mention that that window or that photograph demonstrated the presence of a water leak in the ceiling. And so assuming that that was a real water leak, has there been any discussion as to whether or not we should have mold testing done in units that show the presence of active leaks or past leaks even?
Absolutely. As I indicated in one of the slides, as we come into each of the properties, even though when we set out the work for 17 based on the GPNA, we had certain general items we wanted to address, cabinets and such. But as we look at each of the properties, we'll tailor the scope of work specific to that property, or indeed specific to given apartments within that property. Each of our three construction supervisors has been assigned a portion of the work for 17, and they have already been out to the properties to look at what needs to be done specifically. So in this particular case, if there's an indication of a roof leak or a water leak or potential for discoloration, we would certainly make sure that that is addressed.
What about the HVAC systems? What are we looking at here? Now I'm going specifically to the 39 units.
The 39 units have 39 homes have standalone furnaces. Each house has, and a number of them have been replaced, as I understand it, during the last year. As we look at each of the houses, we'll determine if, in fact, we need to replace additional ones to follow the SDG&E standards.
I'm going to go back to the water heaters one more time. In terms of your practice, is it your practice that when you need to replace a water heater, you obtain a plumbing permit for that?
Absolutely, yes, sir.
Okay, because 90% of water heaters, I believe about 90% of water heaters that get replaced do so illegally, and because the code requires a permit. Okay. I have no other questions. And this is really, isn't it? I don't think we have an action request here, do we? Recommend the Housing Authority approve the plan. The money's already been approved. So then the question is, do we wish to approve the way that money is going to be spent? It's been moved approval by Commissioner Spoon. It's been seconded by Commissioner Surdy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. Thank you. Okay. Next is item 108, and 108 is going to be presented by Counselor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to have some help from Mr. Gentry as well. I'm presenting this matter because the action potentially affects some compensation of members of the Housing Commission, and for that reason, to avoid any appearance of impropriety, I'm going to do it together with Mr. Gentry. The action is requesting that the classification compensation plan, which is attached as attachment one to your report, be approved. That's for represented members of the commission. This is being done in accordance with the class and comp study, which was contracted for, and we entered into a contract with public sector personnel consultants in March of 2015. That was done in accordance with direction from this board previously. Action item number two allows the CEO to implement the recommendations that were made by that consultant. Summary of those recommendations is attached as attachment two. Part of that item six has already been approved in the MOU matter today, which includes bringing the health insurance benefit allowances for the commission employees closer to the market averages. The consultant found that the commission was significantly under market. And because the commission desires to be an employer of first choice, it's important that the pay, that the benefits be in line with the market. Action item three deals with revised pay ranges for all of the employees of the Housing Commission except the executive management service. That was done, again, in connection with recommendations made by the consultant, and we recommend that you make that approval as well. So as to item four, there has been a desire by the CEO and with knowledge by this board to revise the executive management service and to add additional positions within that group. And let me turn this over to Mr. Gentry at this time to explain what happened.
Essentially, this is exactly what we discussed in closed session last month, and where we've done a restructuring at the top of the organization to provide for better strategic management and also to provide for succession planning going forward, as well as make sure that any unexpected changes occur seamlessly going forward. Hopefully the CEO status remains exactly as it is now. There will be two executive VPs. One currently is Jeff Davis, and the other, a promotion, is Debbie Ruane. And I'm changing Jeff's, proposing to change Jeff's job title from COO to Chief of Staff, which I think is a little higher status, and it is the same job that Jennifer Adams Brooks had, if you will remember. prior to her passing away 3 years ago. And this will further reinforce Jeff's status as the clear-cut number two person in the organization and hopefully allow me to throw some more work at him, too. We also increased Debbie Ruane's position from a senior VP to executive vice president. She still will have real estate in her portfolio, but it also allows her to broaden her reach to be the chief strategy officer. And what we're looking for this position to encompass going forward is not just looking for additional governmental programs, which, of course, we will continue doing, but to look in a business-like way, in a private sector-like way, of how we can increase our business model so that we're not just looking for money to spend, but we're looking for ways to increase the capacity of the agency to engage in a greater degree of private sector-like work. And I think given Debbie's background, both as a developer and a banker, is a perfect set for her her skills and going forward. The Senior VP of Communications, Maria Velasquez, will remain the same. As you remember, she increased from a VP to Senior VP status about 2 years ago when we added the legislative liaison function to her, and that will remain the same. There will be a few other adjustments as well to the overall executive management of the organization. Suket Dayal will move to a Senior VP status working under Jeff. In addition to the program strategy work that he does right now, which he does such an excellent job at, he will also pick up some back office administrative functions related to the administrative procurement and IT functions. I will point out that the HR and financial functions, including the CFO, will continue reporting directly to Jeff. Within the real estate function, we'll also promote proposing to promote Mike Pavko, who currently is at a VP status and runs HDP, and he and his staff have done a wonderful job with that. You can see that just outside the window here. And Mike will be managing not only development activities, but also our asset management activities as well to get a better coordination there. He will remain under Debbie's direct supervision, but will pick up additional duties, which will allow Emily Jacobs to move up to vice president level, and she is the lady who's done such a wonderful job developing the rehab of the building right outside the window here. I will point out that real estate finance will continue to report directly to Debbie. There may be some other additional adjustments going forward, but I think that what this does is it better allows us to expand our function. It better allows us to provide for succession planning and unexpected occurrences, and it also allows the agency to move to a higher level. And that is in conjunction with some board direction I received from you all last summer. And it also, I think, reflects the history of this agency and where we are right now with all the changes we've gone through the last few years. So I'll be glad to answer any questions there if you'd like, but that at least the top of the agency is the recommendation.
And just finish this out quickly, the pay ranges shown in attachment 4 are based in large part upon a HUD-mandated study that our office undertook in accordance with the HUD requirements, and that study is referenced as attachment 5. And finally, we've handed out a corrected version of attachment 6. There was a Michael McKenna has a large attention to detail and found that there was between a $1 and $9 difference in the last column on the monthly salaries, and so he went forward and corrected that, and so this corrected version is substituted for attachment 6 on your report.
So staff will thank
you. It should, yes. I think there were all increases. So.
And if I could, one thing I left out because it's not being directly changed with this restructuring, but represents the largest and most significant part of the organization is our voucher department, our RAP, rental assistance program. Azucena Valladolid is the senior vice president operating our, in dollar terms, our largest programs. And she will continue reporting directly to Jeff Davis as well. But I did not want to slide our third floor at all. Let me also point out that this implements the first full salary and comp study this agency has done, what, Judge, in about 16 or 18 years?
17 years.
Those of you who've been around for a while remember I tried to do this in 2009, which resulted in some increases, and it hit a firestorm down the street because that was exactly the time the recession was hitting and the city was going through some cutbacks and some salary reductions, and so I very quickly withdrew that. Not that it wasn't warranted. And so I think what this does is it brings things up to standard. I'll also point out, I think, the fact that we've gone through this exercise in full transparency with our staff. The staff knows it. And we've gone about a strategic planning exercise in full compliance with our staff and using them as the assets that they are is one reason we were able to move to closure on the union MOU so smoothly and quickly this year as well, not to mention the great leadership on that regard that Jeff Davis showed too. Thank you.
And one last comment. This matter does not have to go to the Housing Authority. On April 21st, 2009, the Housing Authority, by resolution, Housing Authority Resolution 1419, gave full authority to this board to implement these changes without review by the Housing Authority.
Okay, Commissioners, any questions? This is your opportunity.
I'd just like to compliment staff for putting this together. It was a tremendous amount of work, and I know how long you've all been working on it. So I think it's excellent. You've just really done an excellent job. Thank you very much.
Did you wish to follow that with a motion? Okay. Commissioner Spoon has moved approval of the recommended actions in item 108. Is there a second? Commissioner Davis, I'm not sure who won. I recognize Commissioner Davis. Commissioner Davis has seconded. Any additional discussion? Seeing no indication of such, I'll call the question. All in favor say aye. Opposed? The motion is carried unanimously. Thank you very much. And staff, thank you very much for working on this as well. Okay, we're going to go to our last item, which is an information item only, item 110. And as a reminder, when we came back into the public session, Kelso did advise that the rest of the consent agenda, or pardon me, the rest of the closed agenda items will be moved to next month. No further discussion on that. So I'm just announcing that. All right. So item 110. Thank you for waiting patiently, but I'm sure we're going to benefit from it. So.
Good morning, Chair, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, and Council. I'm Susana Valladolid, Vice President of the Rental Assistance Division. With me today is Stephanie Murphy, the Director of Workforce and Economic Development Department. We have an informational presentation for you this morning to share the successes we've had at the Achievement Academy over the past year, and also to provide an update of the new services and programs we've recently implemented. Before we begin the presentation, we'd like to share a brief video of a success story of a participant, Heidi Schneider, who has used the Rental Assistance and Achievement Academy services to improve the quality of her family's life and is now on track to surrender her voucher due to reaching economic independence.
When I first received assistance, I was a homeless pregnant teen. And by the age of 23, I had two children under the age of three. I was a single mother on welfare, food stamps, Medi-Cal. Within a couple of years, I got a job as a waitress, and I was living paycheck to paycheck, supporting myself and my children. It was difficult. It was basically about just surviving. But I was always really thankful that I had housing because I knew that no matter what, we wouldn't be homeless like I had been. Then I decided that I wanted something more out of life. I wanted something more for me. I wanted something more for my children. So I enrolled at the local community college. I hadn't been in school for about 10 years, so I didn't know what I was going to do. But I actually found that I loved learning and I was good at it, which really helped with my self-esteem. I graduated in 2007 with an AA degree. I transferred to California State University, San Marcos. 2 years later, I earned a bachelor's degree in criminology and justice studies. That same year, I applied and started a doctoral program at UC San Diego in sociology. And as you said, actually on May 20th, 2016, I will defend my dissertation, and I'll officially be Dr. Schneider. So... there is absolutely no way that I would have had the opportunity to go to school if I didn't have my rent subsidized. I didn't have to work three jobs to support my family. I was able to take that time and go to school. I always felt like I had someone in my corner, someone that supported me, someone that wanted me to be successful, and I'm speaking specifically of SSS. I don't know where my story ends. I graduate. I'm looking for a job as a full-time professor. You know, hopefully I'll find one soon and be able to use that money that I got from the SSS program to purchase my first home and phase out of housing assistance. I'm hopeful within 2 years. That's my goal. But in the meantime, I know that my children will never have to experience homelessness like I did. And so that gives me great peace of mind, and I'm so grateful. The work that you do is not in vain, that we all really do appreciate everything that you do for us every single day, even if some of us maybe don't say that, but do. And you're affecting people, thousands of people's lives every day in a positive way. So please keep up the good work, and much respect to you all.
Also with Heidi, she was a big advocate of making sure that her children were on the right path as well. So for her, making the example of you can do something better for yourself and you can change your path and you don't always have to rely on subsidies was very important for her. So we've seen that sort of change in her and also with her family. So we're very, very proud of Heidi. Before we discuss the new programming at the Achievement Academy, I'd like to provide a brief overview of the existing core services that have been put in place to reach our objective of increasing economic independence and breaking generational poverty among our program participants. The three core services provided at the Academy are employment placement and career improvement, personal financial education and coaching, along with access to income supports. The three core services were implemented with conjunction of Path to Success, a moving to work initiative that revised the rent calculation and incorporated minimum rents for the Housing Choice Voucher Program. The implementation of Path to Success created a need to create programming to increase economic independence for our program participants. Over the past several years, the Achievement Academy has focused on providing work readiness and self-sufficiency services and has been very successful. In the past year, a great deal of time and resources has been spent cross-training our Housing Choice Voucher and Achievement Academy staff, along with partnering with our Communications and Legislative Affairs Division on community outreach activities
in an effort to increase participant awareness of available services and also to increase the number of participants accessing Achievement Academy programming. The outreach efforts, along with new agency initiatives, led to new populations visiting the Achievement Academy, and as a result, we've designed and implemented new and unique programs. I'm going to hand it over to Stephanie, who's going to provide a brief update of the existing core services before she shares the details of the new focus and the new programming at the Achievement Academy.
Good morning. Here we have some numbers from what we've done in the past three fiscal years. And I just wanted to show with the Path to Success program what we've been able to accomplish, just kind of really focusing on providing services, workforce development services to our participants. We've increased the individuals that are receiving services. We project to have to serve about 2,000 this fiscal year. Our participants placed, it's not as high of a number, but keep in mind this is a tough group of people. Sometimes they've been long-term unemployed. They need to have some educational information and background before they can get their first job. So it is a long-term strategy that we have with our participants. Some take between 8 to 10 months to find their first job. Our hourly wage has gone up. And then we have had a focus on credit scores. So in the beginning, we didn't focus as much on individuals increasing their credit score. And we're now looking at about 100 individuals to increase their credit score from where they were before. These are the services that we've provided in the last few years. We've focused on workforce readiness. We've had trainings on site. Financial Education and Counseling, our FSS program. One thing that I do want to mention is at the bottom, we have some specialized programs that we've been focusing on. And part of the reason we've been focusing on that is funders are looking for something new, different, and unique to fund. And that's more of a family approach, a multi-generational approach, than instead of just working with an individual. So we have two specialized programs that are going to be focused towards families. And I'll go more in depth on that. So the number of individuals receiving services, we've had little over 1,000, 1,333, almost 900 enrolled into the program, and about 437 of them are currently employed. We have a great amount of people in our Family Self-Sufficiency Program, and you just saw Heidi, who just graduated from that. We have 326. I've been here for almost 4 years, and this is an area that's changing a little bit. When I first started, we had 75% were female, and that's gone down to 70% female, and part of that is because we've changed our focus to vets and to homelessness, which predominantly more men are in that area, so it's great to see that there's an increase in men using our services. And then, again, the schooling. I have an amazing team downstairs, and we have 6 workforce readiness specialists that work with a caseload of about 144 clients, and each one of them have a specialty. In this past year, these were the specialties that we focused on: internal communication, education, internal training, employer services, external training, and then our newest one, which is the grade level reading literacy and our financial program. Every single one of our workforce readiness specialists are tracked every month to make sure that they meet and exceed the goals that we set for them. Some of the programs that you've probably heard about recently, I'll talk about how we've been working directly with them. Housing Our Heroes, we've been seeing an increase of vets using our services downstairs, and we're starting to provide the employment and educational services directly to them. The Monarch School Program, we have the families that are currently working with us. It's a mandatory. They're required to use the Achievement Academy. So this is going to be interesting to see something when individuals are mandated to use the services, how that goes. So far, it's been really good. We also have our 25 SDHC housing homeless families that we're working with. And that we've been seeing if we can increase or change some of the services that we're offering so it's really specific to those families. But we have had some great placements from them. And the last time I was here, I talked about our focus on youth programs. And we have our youth programs are between 16 and 24. And in fiscal year 2015, we served 177 youth, and it looks like this year we're going to serve about 235. We work really closely with our partnering agencies and have really enjoyed having the youth be down at the Achievement Academy. It's actually been, they're quite invigorating, so we've really enjoyed that. So the programs that I want to talk about that we're working on are unique programs. So our first one is our multi-generational program we call Pressing Forward Together. And this is where we're taking families, and we're actually providing services directly to families, not just the adult or just the youth. And it's mandatory that parents attend with their children. And the youth can go either education or employment. The parents have to enroll in the FSS program and be seeking employment. Thanks to Commissioner Surdy, we have established a partnership with Junior Achievement. They're a wonderful organization, and we're going to be able to do a summer Junior Achievement program just for this Pressing Forward Together group, and we're really looking forward to that. We'll give you more details. It's probably going to be on a Saturday, and anyone wants to volunteer, they can. And then we have specialized training programs that we're offering. We're going to provide support services. It's a two-generational training focus, having the parents and kids be together and really learn from each other. The youth meet weekly, and the family meets monthly, and that program started in April 13th, and we're really, really excited about it. The next program is going to be starting in June, and this is our single-parent family. We're targeting families that just have one parent in the household, and typically when you have one parent in the household, the impact on the kids, it's tough to get the reading done, it's tough for them to provide extracurricular activities. So we looked at creating a program that's going to help the parent and the child also be successful. So the parent must enroll into FSS, and then we are going to provide a summer reading program for the youth in this program. We're partnering with the Campaign for Grade Level Reading, and we also partnered a lot with the Downtown Library, and I'll talk a little bit more about what we're going to be doing. And we'll also have a one-day Junior Achievement event like we have with the other one. They're going to have assistance to part-time employment or full-time, depending on what they're interested in, childcare resources, transportation, and assessments. So what we're doing with our grade level reading and literacy, thanks to Chair Gramling, we really put a focus on it this last year. And it's been really interesting to see the transition of what we've done downstairs. So we're partnering with the Campaign for Grade Level Reading. San Diego is not currently part of the campaign, but that should happen within the next 2 months. We've been involved in making that happen for about 6 months now, so it's not a quick process. And I know HUD is also looking at public housing authorities to be involved in the Campaign for Grade Level Reading, so we're at least in the beginning of this. And I also created a partnership with the Downtown Library. And this is something that I'm really excited about. We're going to actually be an arm of the library. We have books downstairs. They've donated books for us. So for the first time ever, we actually have books for the kids to be able to read. So far, we have 150 for them to use and borrow. And the library will continue to have our location as a spot that they're going to donate books to throughout the year. They also are allowing us to be a part of their summer reading program, which is enabling the kids to either read. You can read 10 hours or 10 books, and you document it online. And if you once you get to the amount of books, once you hit 10, then you're going to be able to receive free coupons. And they've given us the coupons to provide. So they'll be able to do it, and we'll be able to track that on site. We're going to distribute library cards so they can fill out the paperwork, and we're also going to have trips down to the library so they can start feeling comfortable going down there. And the youth in our 16 to 24-year-old program are going to be allowed to volunteer at the library so they can get credit for school or credit or put something on their resume that they're volunteering at the San Diego Library. Really excited about that program. So we're still doing workforce development, and this is a list of the employers that have been using our services and coming on site and recruiting our participants. A couple that I want to mention, San Diego Zoo just recently hired 4 of our participants, and the Lawton Group, they, whenever there's an election, they always have temporary jobs for the election, and they've hired 3 of our folks to help out with the election in June, and then they also will have another in November. So we're looking forward to working with them. And we couldn't do what we're doing without our partners, and here's a list of partners that have really made a difference for us this past year. And sometimes our partners are actually employers, and Partners with Industry has hired 3 of our participants to work with their organization. Downtown Library, Jewish Family Services has been a great help with us too, and we're looking forward to working with our partners. So the near future, what we're looking to do. We want to continue to work with our youth program, and there's a charter school called Pathway Academy, and they said that they would come on site. They're going to work out of our computer lab, and they are going to be able to provide high school diplomas and GED for our youth. It's going to be no cost to us, and it's going to really help our kids to make sure that if they do drop out of school, we can help get them on track really quickly. And recently, we received $250,000 in funding for our Resident Opportunities and Self-Sufficiency, which is ROS funding, and that is so we can now expand the services that we're offering at the Achievement Academy directly to our public housing. So I get to hire another workforce readiness specialist, and they're going to be creating the same literacy program, workforce development program, financial education at our public housing sites. And last but not least, The future programs that we have, we're still working really closely with the Housing Opportunity Collaborative regarding the virtual counseling network. We now have the virtual counseling going on downstairs in the Achievement Academy, and we're expanding within this month, we're expanding to the Metro and South Metro Career Center, and we're going to start collaborating and having our workshops be taught in different locations and people can access it virtually. So we're really looking forward to seeing how this can expand our services. We continue to look for local and national funding. We continue to look at best practices so that funders will want to fund us and create programs that are unique. We want to expand our programs to focus on veterans, looking at best practices on how to serve veterans and what programming we can do for them. And we want to continue to develop our youth program, and we're now establishing a youth council so they feel they have a voice in what we're doing in the academy. And that is, in a nutshell, what we've been doing down in the last year.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
It's really good. And you talked about family sufficiency. We had a resident commissioner who preceded our current ones who was a graduate of that program and is a homeowner now. So it's amazing the miracles that can be created. Mr. Gentry.
2 comments. 3, number 1, thank you. This is great. Number 2, in 2012, Jeff Davis and I basically hired a consultant to help us put together a major restructuring of our Achievement Academy downstairs. Hired Stephanie. A lot of changes to staff down there. And I'll point out to the board that we are getting twice as much work done with 10 or 20 times the success with half of the staff numbers that we had when I got here in 2008 in this department. So Stephanie and her folks have done wonderful work down there. Related, but just to kind of cap this thing, in February, we were visited by a group of Canadians out of Ontario, led by an old buddy of mine out of Ottawa. Nothing Canadians love to do more in the wintertime than to get out of Canada. So they spent some time up the road with the L.A. Housing Authority, and then they came down to visit with us. And these two ladies blew them away so much that the Ontario Housing Association has asked the 3 of us, mainly because of them, to come and speak at their annual conference in Toronto in November.
Good for you. Well, you know, if you look in Webster's dictionary, if there is still such a thing, and you look for the definition of snowbird, it's got a picture of a Canadian on that. So, anyhow, thank you again. Great job, and we'll look forward to the next report. On that note, we've completed our agenda after much trial and error and effort, and this meeting is hereby adjourned. Thank you.